The BioRevolution Podcast.
Your hosts,
Luise von Stechow
and Andreas Horchler. The BioRevolution Podcast, Medical Machines Get Smarter, AI in MedTech, our topic today. Hello, Easy.
Hello.
We again have a guest. We're in Berlin with Julian Balmes, Ida Lab MedTech expert. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Maybe we open the field by the quotes you brought, Easy.
Yes, and I'll start with one of the, I would say he's kind of a thought leader in AI and medtech, at least when I follow my LinkedIn profile. It's Jan Berger. He's at GE Healthcare, head of AI advocacy. And he says, overall, the idea with AI is really, how can we automate tasks which are redundant, repetitive, and mundane? And I think that's a key question. Are these really the only and the right tasks for AI, or can we find some others?
Let's get right into it. What's the landscape right now? What's the lay of the land when it comes to AI and medtech in the light of the quote we just heard?
So to start with, maybe, I think the medtech industry is a very interesting industry for AI for several reasons. And not just because it's a massive industry that influences billions of people every day. So we're talking about approximately like $600 billion industry per year. But maybe for also to look into contrast with another huge industry, also in healthcare, the pharma, we have, first of all, a highly fragmented market. So we have something like 80% small and medium enterprises. And for them, that usually is maybe one of the first hurdles to get to AI. And then also we have a large diversity of products. So we have something like 500,000 products and like 10,000s of categories. But also, at the same time, these devices, first of all, produce data, usually, and also they're often very close to the patients. And so it would be great if we can get over all the legacy technology, the regulatory hurdles, and I'm sure we're talking about that, but also about these like very tech-focused culture that we have in many of these companies, and really leverage this data, this position that they have, and like open the path to the patient and allow these companies to combine the data with their very detailed knowledge about diseases and help to navigate patients, patient journeys better than we can at the moment.
And I think that is really a very interesting aspect of integrating AI into medtech, because it enables some of the other trends that we're seeing in healthcare and medicine, which is actually having empowered patients, patients who have a better understanding of what kind of disease they have and how can they manage, how can they monitor it. And for example, technologies like wearables, like other smart sensors, can help the patients understand much better what they have. Because I think, I mean, something that we all know is that often patients who sit at the doctors don't quite understand what they're actually dealing with. I think this is one trend. The other one is that we have probably a trend towards having medicine much more virtual over time. And that, I think, is enabled by many, many different trends in medtech, which can be helped by AI. I mean, this again is, of course, for example, monitoring heart rate with a smartwatch, but that can also be, for example, automatic integration of alarms in hospital systems. That's something, Julian, right, that you worked on. I mean, there are many, many different layers to that beyond the ones that very obviously come to mind. So I think here you really have this technology that can be an enabler for many, many different things. And this is quite exciting.
Real world examples. It's just crossing my mind. A few weeks ago, I went to a huge plant of a corporate medtech industry driver, artificial hips, knees, scalpels, stuff like that, chip worldwide. And so, of course, they have a lot of AI applications in their administration, stuff like that. They have robots in the production and so forth. But I mean, there must be a lot more under the hood for them to accomplish through and by AI. I'm not blaming, I'm not picking on one corporate, of course, but want to see the big picture.
So when we're talking about like what is needed so that companies in this field can actually leverage AI, and maybe not only for the administrative work or like the production, but also actually something with patients and doctors, healthcare providers can benefit from, then I think we have several examples, but also it is complicated due to some regulatory hurdles, but of course also, for example, due to how the payment system is organized. So the people that usually benefit are not the people who pay for that. And so we have sometimes incentive systems that doesn't help. But we also have a couple of companies that were really, really successful. So to name maybe one or two. So Varian is probably one that made great success in their provider focus. So they had a focus on oncology, radiation therapy, and they built a whole suite of services around that. So AI tools for supporting things like treatment planning, like image segmentation. And they were recently bought by Siemens Healthineers. And back then, I think it was like 50% of their revenue was due to services. So they really made the way from basically being a maker of medical devices to also become a service provider. And I think that is one of the core challenges that many of these companies have. We also have some other companies that were more patient focused. So ResMed might be another good example here. They started with the classic companion app, you could say, and then built more and more support systems for patients with sleep apnea, with COPD, to basically then cover the full care continuum. And now they're able, based on that, because they have all the data over the full patient journey, to put things like an AI-based personalized sleep recommendation on top. And I feel these are strategies that companies can learn from. And one part is to look at what do we want to focus on, but also how can we really build something along the whole way from getting the data, getting the connectivity, to then the final step, building services on top.
And it should be very interesting for those who are in charge of giving the money at the end of the day, because if you have the full-blown journey from, let's say, from gadget to real application monitoring a lot of health data at that point, it should be very beneficial and saving not only time, but saving lives and saving a lot of money, right?
Yeah. So one way to like formulate maybe a bit of a vision here is that often healthcare, we still have a very reactive system.
Absolutely. Yes.
And of course, we would love to have something like an, you could say maybe like an always on triage system, right? Where we are continuously monitored and continuously have systems around us that say, oh, here we see maybe an issue, so there we should start to check, and not just when people start to feel the pain in their chest and then say, oh.
And I think maybe one of the biggest, like anecdotally, I would say great success story are really the smartwatches, like the Apple Watch that can detect AFib, because, I mean, this is indeed really a change, right? If you notice on time that you might have a problem with your heart and not when it's too late. And also having a chance to manage these conditions. And I think there are different providers, right? So I think this is really an example of this, how continuous monitoring can really benefit the patient, but might also in the long run benefit the healthcare system by catching something at a non-reactive stage, but more at a preventative stage.
We can also already see is that's not only about like monitoring, but also actually driving some decisions there. So their patients who use their smartwatch, if they have a pocket in the pill plan, so they basically have atrial fibrillation events, but they don't take certain medications continuously, but just when they have an event. So they can use the smartwatch to basically decide on, oh, do I have now an event? Should I take the medication or not? And that already works, because we know also from some studies around these smartwatches, which started as consumer device and then moved more and more into the medical device field, that especially heart rate measurements are very reliable. It is a bit different probably for some other indicators like oxygen saturation, respiratory rate. There the patient needs to be more carefully, but I feel especially heart monitoring ECGs are really a big success story here.
But I think, I mean, one thing, and I don't know how you see that, Julian, but I think one risk, of course, is to put patients on alert. I think in many cases, it's useful to have this alarm. Sometimes I wonder if you're being alarmed for something that,
it's a psychological factor behind it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Certainly. And we know that, of course, also from other settings, so like hospital settings where we have alarm systems now for decades, and where we see that, of course, for all device manufacturers, they have a strong incentive to not miss any event. And that often leads to many, many, many alarms that are not really actionable. And that, of course, can also lead to a cry wolf phenomenon where at some point people just don't respond anymore. So, yeah, that is certainly something that you have to take into account.
I'd be very interested in the regulatory framework. You mentioned that before, that there are some problems along the way. When I think about the wonderful German word, digitale Patientenakte, I mean, the surveys showed very clearly years ago that patients who suffer from a disease say, hello, come on, give it to me, you know, but those who are healthy say, oh no, data protection and so forth. You know, it's always kind of the same can that's kicked down the road in a sense, you know, but to make the applications really fruitful, really happening for those who are healthcare providers, for the clinics, for the patient, for everybody involved, and make it an economic success as well, you need some modification of regulation, I guess.
You do. And basically, they're now shaping up the regulations. AI-enabled medical devices, I mean, it has been difficult to regulate them because there haven't been so many in the past. And the focus was very strongly, for at least the ones that are authorized by FDA, on the radiology. So I think it's still 3/4, which are some kind of radiology type of medical imaging related devices. And most of them have been authorized under like pathway that is regulating moderate risk devices. And now we get different types of devices, and the FDA has just published a draft guidance that has more transparency. That's also something that patients have been calling for, because it turns out that patients often don't know if AI has been used, or the doctor tells them there has no AI been used when in your diagnosis, and then they see the report and they see, ah, but there was an AI-enabled medical device that was probably used somewhere along the way, but the doctor maybe didn't even know about it. So I think for patients, this is really scary. And there have been quite some studies that show that patients generally, at least in the past decade, had quite a low trust on AI, which of course also comes from systems not working so well in the past, and especially decision tools like IBM's Watson, where we got to know that it made sometimes also kind of ludicrous suggestions for treatments or diagnosis. So I think for patients, all this is a black box and it's scary. So getting more transparency is important. And this is something that also the FDA is trying. I mean, they're trying to increase the transparency and trying to give some guidance what needs to be submitted. And this is a draft guidance, which is now in the phase where people can give feedback on it, and then it will come into effect potentially. What the FDA also has included, and that's actually also quite interesting, is method to make modifications on devices. Because at the moment, this is a locked state. And I think this is also something that is the case in the EU, that the device is the device. And if you want to make changes, that's a challenge. And with the current models and new data updates, that can easily become quite difficult to handle, I think. One thing I think that we need to take into account is that in the United States, at the FDA and regulations around healthcare and the regulations around AI, there is some volatility at the moment that I find it very hard to make predictions where it's going. I would assume that patient safety is not at the forefront of the minds of the people who make decisions at the moment around AI, but this is just my personal hunch on it. So I think here it's really a little bit difficult to see where this is going. The other part, in the EU, we have the MDR, the medical device regulation, that was instated in 21, which already is relatively complicated. Classifies medical devices based on risk, depending on, yeah, if it's like knee replacement, clinical decision support tool, or maybe a glove or something. I mean, depends how much risk the patient will be in if they interact with the device. But already there is a lot of uncertainty often. I have also been involved in some of these processes, and I can say there is a lot of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to navigate, even if you have experts on board. Experts make it easier, but there is just this risk classification process, the documentation process, and also finding the notified bodies. It's already a challenge. Now, on top of that, we have the EU AI Act that kind of regulates the same thing.
Yes.
At the same time. And that's somehow
slightly different.
Slightly different.
Yeah.
Same, but different. And those two somehow need to align. And there are points where it's possible to align, for example, the documentation, but some things also have to be doubled. And sometimes it's not really clear which part of the device will fall under which regulation and which notified body is in charge of testing it. And this is just, I would say it feels from the outside a little bit messy.
Jumping ship is not an option, right?
That's true. But what we, of course, also have heard from our clients is that many regulatory teams already say we have so much to do with the MDR. Like, we don't need the EU AI Act on top or in addition. And so that definitely can become a hurdle, because if the regulatory team says no, then there's just no path to the market, right? At the same time, I think in general, the big question here is, how do we want to regulate something that is not fully deterministic in the end? And one approach is to say we don't, and we just trust the process, basically. And so we ensure that we have certain ways how things are developed, monitored, tested, and then hope that this will also ensure performances, biases, etc. is accounted for. And the other way would be to have some sort of reference data set, some sort of probably simulated environments where we can actually test AI algorithms and also test them quickly.
Yeah, and I think this is an important point, because I think one of the challenges, and we can maybe mention also the example that you had for that. I mean, the one thing is, of course, the regulation. So getting it approved, getting it authorized, mm-hmm. getting it on the market. But the other part is, what do you do then with it in the real world? Because often, I mean, you would have to test it in the real world situation with your own data, with your own environment, with your own workflow. And this doesn't always work as well or not at all. And this is, again, also some feedback, for example, that I got like on conferences from radiologists, where you always bring the example, it works really well for radiology. And then people is like, for us, it doesn't work. And our data, it doesn't work, because it's, because I mean, it does work really well in the test data set. But if you then change any of the parameters, in their hands, it takes a long time to get it to work, or sometimes it doesn't work. And I mean, this is also a reality that, of course, this kind of development in the vacuum isn't always applicable to real world scenarios.
It's a field of real urgency, on the other hand, you know, because we have to renovate our systems, because people like myself, and there are millions of them, are going into retirement right now. Meaning that the capacity needs are increasing, the amount of money is not increasing. So how do we deal with this? And AI might be part of the solution. I mean, speaking very, very generalistic, but at that point, we need a regulation that is kind of working and making applications possible.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I think we could benefit from, both in terms of regulation, but also in terms of integration of the system, because it's all very new, that we're like going through a lot of uncertainty here. And I think this is what we're feeling with these new technologies. I think having pragmatic solutions would be really, really helpful. I mean, also something that you just mentioned, having the simulated environments wherein to test the models before you let them loose on the poor radiologist who then says, yeah, but it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work?
Very true. And also like having some reference data that we can use, and because one thing is to bring to the market once, but as you said, like the real power is probably if we would be able then to adapt and update based on what the model sees then. And so we can't like write model cards every week. And for sure, there are no notified bodies who can read them and like comment on them and send them back. So we need to find a way how to also make a process possible that allows some sort of development cycles here.
Yeah, absolutely plausible, because it's not an entirely new project, but in a sense, it's an update only. So that's
right.
A very different story.
And there are some projects that are trying to move this idea forward of having some sort of testing facility. So this is TEF projects. One is here in Berlin at Charité, where they working for the medical sector, the others for other sectors as well, and trying to come up with ideas how this could be done in a way that is at least semi-automated and not just based on like writing long documentation and then printing them and sending them to the TÜV.
What do you feel in general? So I think this is such a hot topic, so I need to ask you, where do you see agentic AI going? Do you think it's the big thing, especially in medicine, that will it make its own decisions and really take over tasks from doctors? Or is it something that we're talking about very excitedly now and then 2 years from now, no one will remember what that was? Is it the way of the, what was this? The mini disc that was so famous.
Yes. Ancient.
You're a bit younger, so you, I don't know if you know still the mini disc, but that was a hype for a year.
Yeah. So it's for sure the next big thing for the next months.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we can say. I feel in general, the idea is plausible to say, okay, we have these gigantic models, but they're really hard to steer. They're really hard to tailor to specific tasks. We try to basically modularize that and break this into components. And these components are specialized on something. What I'd like to see is all the concepts being tested on how do these models really interact and how do they interact with other systems, because the full potential would be if they can really like work with, for example, hospital data and they go to the EHR system, get some data out, etc. But we know that interfaces are often not just there. And that is one of the big issues that we have in many applications, especially in this field, right? That we don't have the data over the full system. So we talked already about the Digitale Patientenakte, which is one part of this. But of course, there's so many legacy systems that are running on some databases designed in the 80s just for a very specific use case and not for like data sharing, data integration, etc. So that I think is one part, and not only the tech part, but also why should companies now open up that haven't offered any kind of APIs so far? The other part that I'm really curious to see is how do we really train and test these agentic systems? Because then we have a lot of little decisions that are really hard also to control and also pretty hard to train and test beforehand, because the whole value would be that it's not just like set of standardized tasks, but like reacting to input. And so I feel that could be challenging to get to a performance, to get to a accuracy reliability that we need in many, many, many settings.
And I think also from a regulatory standpoint, again, you might actually have different risk classes within your agent. So how do you even put that into the regulation if you have like a multi-purpose model at the center and then you have the smaller pieces around? I think especially also under the MDR, you have to have this intended use, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a multimodal agent that can do many things, then it will also be tricky to assign this clear use case even.
Yeah. Nevertheless, we always are like often talking about the medical use case, and then we're thinking we get a diagnosed directly, don't need the radiologist. But also we have all these administrative processes about like scheduling, organizing, billing, etc. And there, of course, we might have more options to use these kind of systems.
Which then also would not be as regulated, which of course, yeah. And I think there, I mean, this is also almost a little bit industry agnostic, right? Yeah. That you have a lot of back office tasks that AI can do very well and will be doing very well in the future. And I think especially in the healthcare and medicine sector, you have many, many, many of those, and you keep people who are in charge of medicine busy filling out forms and faxing them.
But that also means we have a lot of like guardrails. We know kind of what we need at the end. And so it might help us to check then later on, is billing correct? Because we know like certain parameters need to be accomplished.
You mentioned the ivory towers in clinics, in corporates and businesses, having their own server in the basement, some code written in the 1980s, 90s, and saving their own stuff for eternity. And I mean, it's a no-brainer to know that in the age of AI, you need data sharing more than anything. Where do we stand in that journey right now? What would you say, how far is the path to go?
I think that really depends on where we're looking. And so we have definitely some initiatives on this data sharing, not only from companies, but also things like the European health data space that are moving in this direction. Nevertheless, I know from the projects that we did that often the whole data integration, like understanding what's in the data, is a huge part and not easily automated. Because it's not just about systems are very differently, but also then people are using them very differently. So a doctor might have a certain way how he says, oh, this patient doesn't come the next 2 weeks to the dialysis treatment. But if you're looking just at the data, then it's an X in some random column. And if you don't talk to the doctor, you have no idea what's going on there. So I hope we get to a point where it's easier to share data, where it's easier to integrate data. But I think in many, many areas, that is a very long way to go.
But I think also following now the standards like FAIR and having people more aware, I think AI itself will also be a driver of having data more standardized and in a better shape, basically. So it becomes shareable because there is a lot of data. I mean, we have a lot of data, but a lot of it is also really simply garbage because it's too fractionated. It's not annotated. Yeah. It's not dimensional enough. So we can basically not do anything with it. So.
And even it starts even much, much lower. Anecdotal. I went to a doctor recently and she faxed my data to the clinic. I mean, that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
I think we need faster faxes.
That's the solution. Much better than AI.
Julian, this was really nice. Maybe to finish off, can you very briefly say what are you most excited about for AI and medtech? Do you have any example where you say, wow, that's pretty cool?
So I think everything involving multimodal data and combining very complex data, making sense of that and helping to understand even better what's going on, what might be reasons for disease. And I think we see that it's not directly medtech, but another area that I've worked recently quite a bit. And so for Alzheimer, now just from like looking at the real world evidence, we have new hypotheses on, okay, maybe certain vaccines might have some sort of protective effect. Maybe a better dental hygiene might have some protective effect. And I'm really sure there are way more examples also for everything around medtech and the data that is in these devices, once we can access them and really start to work with them.
And that's cool because these are the companies who have all the data, right? Because they're at the patient. So I think there's really a massive potential, as you pointed out in the beginning.
The BioRevolution podcast, Medical Machines Get Smarter, AI in MedTech. Gunn Bimas was our guest. Many, many thanks again.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Izzy.
Thank you.
This was the BioRevolution podcast. Please subscribe to our show. And if you have remarks, please visit
sciencetales.com.
Sciencetales.com, indeed. And we'll be back with more exciting stories from the BioRevolution. Thank you for tuning in.